Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody out there in True Crime Land, this is your host, Wayne Klingman, with yet another show of Radio Free Mafia. And tonight, we bring you one of the best True Crime Mafia authors I have the pleasure to know. In fact, if anybody alive knows where Jim Mahaffa is buried, it would be tonight's guest, Gavin Smith. In fact, I understand he's so good-looking, they're going to make him Mr. Universe of all time the next time we have a Mr. Universe contest. So with no further ado, let us introduce ourselves, the great, good-looking Gavin Smith. Yay! Go you! How are you doing tonight, sir?
Wow, I am doing great. I did not expect that lead-in. Wow, thank you, Wayne.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sir. Let's take it for you. So, for people who don't know, we met because you helped me with my documentary on Frank, right?
Yep.
And that's how we know each other.
You want me to talk about that? Or?
No. We have questions about that. We'll bring that up because people don't believe part of it. But I want people to understand that we know each other. That's how we know each other. But tonight we're not talking so much about Frank as we are the Mafia of Madison. Now, I grew up in Madison,
correct,
sir, and as I discussed briefly off there, I had no idea it existed. I mean, maybe in the 20s, right? I mean, it was everywhere. But up to when was there a mafia going on in Madison, sir?
It depends who you ask. I mean, at least through the 1960s, but some people say through the 1990s. You know, you never really know they don't publicize that, but at least through the 1960s, maybe the 90s.
Wow. And now, what was the mob up to in Madison, sir?
Well, originally, you know, the same as anybody else. They were very, very heavily involved in Prohibition. Actually, Prohibition in Madison was dangerous, and per capita, the death rate was higher than Chicago, if you can believe that. And you can double-check the numbers on that. It's true. Yeah, they did the same thing that they did anywhere else. They sent black hand letters. I just had a guy send me original black hand letters. He didn't send me the letter. He sent me a picture. But original letters that his grandfather received. So they were doing all that, you know, same as any other city, just a little bit smaller scale.
Wow. I mean, I did not know. I knew that Madison had an Italian neighborhood that we used to call the Triangle. I don't know how it got that name. That's what it was referred to as. I would never have thought that they were targeted by anything like the Black Hand. Amazing. And I tried to be educated. Even as a teenager, I tried to find out more about my community. Was it something that people kept underground because they're embarrassed to talk about it, or kept underground because they're scared of retaliation, or simply people didn't care?
It's very strange. I think that they just sort of don't talk about it. There's a number of books out there that are written about the Greenbush neighborhood, or as you call it, the Triangle, same area.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's people's memories and stories that got passed down from their parents and grandparents. And there's almost none of that in there. Like, everybody has such fond memories. And not that that's not true. I mean, I'm sure there were many great things, but that's not what you read in the papers. So, I don't know why those stories just disappeared.
Yeah, the thing in Milwaukee, I mean, I don't think if I would walk up and on the street of the East Side, right, ask people at random who Frank was, I don't think, if I said it, people more than five would have any idea who I was talking about.
You think so?
Oh, without a doubt. I'm tempted to try it. Because what's amazing, it, because of this, I'm involved in different mafia groups on Facebook, such as you are, I'm sure, right? And one in particular, which I like. I get a lot. There's a lot of people in it. There's a nice, interesting group. They tend to be friendly. But it seems that a lot of them will make statements saying that they knew Frank or his kids, went to school with one of them, did all kinds of things with them. It's like, I find it hard to believe because, well, Joe is what? Must be in his late 70s, early 80s by now, right? To have that many of his friends still living, I find hard to believe, but that's the nature of the beast. People claim all kinds of things. But real life, I think you and I could walk up, say, North Avenue, up and down Farwell, and we have a problem finding people who knew anything about Frank. Yeah. And I find that incredibly sad, because be it Madison, be it Milwaukee, I think having that knowledge of our history is key to understanding about our future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And I agree. You know, I don't know if you know this, but I actually approach things as history. I don't approach it as true crime. I focus more on the crime stuff because that's what sells. But I mean, my interest is in the history. It's, you know, if I was writing the same exact book about the same time period without the crime stuff, I would love it just as much. But it doesn't sell. So,
right.
So I focus on the crime. But yeah, I love getting any of the history out there from Milwaukee or any part of Wisconsin, really. I love Wisconsin history in general.
Well, I do. I mean, I think Wisconsin's history is absolutely fascinating. I mean, my mom grew up in a very poor family where a lot of horrific things happened to her and her sisters as kids. When she was 12 years old, she found herself in Hurley, being a housemaid.
Uh-oh.
Yes. And the one time I made an interest of going up that way to talk to an old filmmaker from the Giant Spider Invasion, I can't think of his name offhand, my mother told me two or three stories about what happened to her as a young girl in Hurley and said, if you ever go there, don't think about coming back here. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Hurley was a very, very bad place.
It's its own world. I don't know how to be polite about it. Not that there's anything wrong with Hurley. I've been to Hurley. It's very nice.
Sure.
But it had its own little
yeah.
world of how they set things up there.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea that Wisconsin had piracy over timber on the Great Lakes is weird.
Yeah.
And then have the lumber barons are weird. I mean, it's like, how am I going to put it? I'll put it this way. It's something I often use. Is I find using X-Files as an example, the X-Files episodes set in Wisconsin are by far, I find, the weirdest. I think is a good reflection of the more interesting elements of the state of Wisconsin. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does, and it's funny. I've always lived here, so I'm a Wisconsin person all the way. For those who don't know, I think you know, but for those who don't know, I work at a library during the day, and I have a coworker who moved here from Colorado, and that was her first impression was like, why is there so much weird shit in Wisconsin? like. It, that was like all the stories that she heard was just, and some of it's the Upper Peninsula too. But you know, we
sure.
can claim that. So
we can.
So she's just like, we didn't have that in Colorado, and I'm like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, we could quickly get away from true crime in Madison, but I just find this whole story fascinating. To think that Burlington has their own. I forget what the correct proper term is, and I hope you can correct me, because if you know it, is we had our own group of Mormons discover their own personal bronze plate. I had no idea that happened.
Yeah.
And then they decided
yeah.
to, hey, we found this plate, let's go to Lake Michigan and become pirates. That's weird.
Yeah. But is that the same group as that went up to Beaver Island?
I believe so, yes, sir.
Yeah. That was Jesse Strang, and yeah, his own little, like, yeah, he, the Mormons rejected him, but he's like, no, we're going to go on and do it our own way. And it's like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But not a well-known story.
No, it's not. And it should be. I mean, to me, it's a perfect,
it
it's a
be.
Perfect movie. You know,
yeah.
web series. I mean, the craziness is this, you know, I find, growing up in school, here I am, a teenager in high school, and I'm bored as all get out because I'm a teenager, right? And what engaged me in school, made me a far better student, is when I had teachers that encouraged questions teachers who encouraged,
yep.
okay, you don't have to agree with what I'm telling you. It's fine. But let's talk about what our disagreement is, but please have facts at your disposal. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a challenge. Okay, Wayne has that challenge. Wayne, well, okay, if I want to say, if I do don't mind me challenging you in class about these subjects, okay, I'll read a book about it. And, of course, the more I read, the more interested I became in history because there's a lot of interesting information there. But
yeah,
turn back to medicine.
History is yeah, obviously I'm biased, but it's like the best field because it can cover everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a topic you're interested in, there's a history of it.
Good.
So it's just great.
That's so wonderful. And today we have the tools where we can look into it and we can discover things we didn't know or confirm things we thought we might know. I mean, today
right.
I write an article on my blog about Betty Bunyan's son, who's the one that committed suicide with the help of his girlfriend, and his lost treasure of silver in the millions, right? And I didn't know about that. And the more you read about it and it's silver and the fact that how do silver bars disappear out of a locked vault and what happened to them, it's fascinating. You know, I mean.
I don't think I know this story.
Oh, so Benny Bunyan's father, the one that started the poker World Series, right, was silver bug. The silver bug and his son got to have it too. So after his father died, the son became very, very depressed, started heroin. Always a good thing I do when I get depressed. And other drugs, and became addicted. His girlfriend found a boyfriend, knew about the silver because the son took all the gold bullion and all the silver bullion, all the silver coins that he had and his father had, put them into a, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it a dumpster, buried it underground, right? And the girlfriend knew about it.
Okay.
Other people probably knew about it too. Long and behold, the son dies. They arrest her and her boyfriend. They get acquitted after a while, but the boyfriend had to go to jail for years. She got acquitted. But nobody could discover whatever happened to the treasure. And we don't mean a few silver coins.
I've not heard that one.
Oh, yeah. And the interesting story in Wikipedia, they give you links you can go from there. And, I'll be talking to a native Nevadian who's an expert when it comes to lost mines and ghost towns about that legend because there's people out there to this day. Well, if I was near Las Vegas, I'd be looking for it too because those bars, those coins are someplace, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
Yeah.
It's just fascinating. The history we don't know. I mean,
it's easy money if you can find it.
Oh, yeah. And unlike sunken treasure in a ship, you don't have to give it back. You know?
I don't know all the rules on that, but yeah, as long as you don't tell people where you got it.
That's right. I mean, I found it interesting to know that when you find lost treasure at sea, it belongs to the country of origin, no matter how long it's been sitting in the bottom of the ocean, which really puts a bummer to treasure hunting, you know, for lost sunken treasure, pirate treasure. But to my understanding, if I was, say, in my backyard and I dug up to dig in a tree and long and behold, I found a box of silver coins, they're mine. And definitely taking your advice, I'm not going to say, yeah, I found them here and I found all these coins with it. It's going to be, I'll sell them one or two at a time to collectors and shining my mouth.
Right.
Yeah. So going back to Madison, sir. Who were the big mafia people in the great capital city of Madison?
Oh, boy. It's hard to say. The most well-known today was a man named Carlo Caputo. But it's weird because even though his name is the most well-known, we know probably the least about him. Because he sort of came up in the 30s and 40s, and he was the head of the family by the 1960s. But there's not a lot out there because by the time the FBI really started looking into this, he was already, you know, getting up there in years, so he wasn't terribly active. They took notes on him and, you know, tracked his taxes, that sort of thing. And he did end up getting into tax trouble, like they all do. But we don't really know a whole lot about him because he just happened to be active in a time when people weren't actively looking into that sort of thing. So he's the most well-known. But then there's some earlier ones. In the Prohibition era, Tony Musso was huge. He ended up moving to Rockford after the Prohibition ended and became really big in Rockford. Joe Geloso, pretty big, and then he ended up getting deported back to Sicily. So there were a handful of some pretty nasty guys over the years. The most famous after Caputo is, to me, the one of the most controversial, and that's Sam Cerro, because there's this debate about whether Sam Cerro was even a mafia guy or not. I sort of think that he wasn't, because his crew was almost entirely local guys who had no, you know, Italian, Sicilian heritage or connections. So he doesn't really have the markings, but he was involved in all that stuff, the prostitution, the narcotics, that sort of fencing. And his uncle was a made guy. So, you know, he has the markings, but I don't know that he ever was actually in it or just knew all the right people. It's hard to say.
Interesting. So as we move from from Prohibition into the 40s, 50s, and 60s, right, did the level of violence go away or go down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the strangest thing about it is, you know, there's always that story that, like, Prohibition caused an explosion in violence. And it depends, you know. In Milwaukee, not so much, because Prohibition wasn't as big of a deal there. Like, everybody made their own booze and drank, and the cops didn't care. So there wasn't really much violence because there wasn't as much competition, you know, for that sort of thing. Whereas in Madison, the Madison police and politicians cracked down as hard as they could, which just made it more profitable and more violent. So Prohibition in Madison in the 1920s to the early 1930s, extremely violent. But then I'm not really aware of any mob murders after around 1935. Like, it just goes away. So it's really weird. Like, Prohibition was like the beginning and the end of the glory years in Madison as far as the mob is concerned.
Really weird. We mean by glory years what we'd consider Chicago, the machine guns, the shotgun blast, stuff like that, versus making money.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it depends how you want to define it. I don't know if it was the most profitable year, but, you know, the year when, like, everyone's the most active, they're making the headlines. Maybe they were more profitable later when they weren't making the headlines. But it's weird because that, you know, 10, 15 years in Madison, it was such a thing where it was in the newspapers every day. Whereas in other cities, you know, like the surrounding areas, Milwaukee and Chicago in particular, you know, that Prohibition ending had no effect on the mob. Like, Chicago is active to this day. Milwaukee was active at least up to the 1980s, possibly today, but at least to the 1980s. So, you know, they didn't rely on Prohibition quite the way that Madison did.
No, well, I'm sorry. Then if they moved into prostitution and massage parlors and the like, well, that's going to be a good source of revenue as well.
Yeah.
So,
no, go ahead.
I apologize. No, my fault. You go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that it's weird because, you see the prostitution really obviously in I'm most familiar with Milwaukee, as you know, and you really see that in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, that there's always prostitution in the background, or sometimes they disguise it where it's, you know, it's not prostitution, but it's dancing girls, but the dancing girls do other things on the side. And Madison, like, I think had that, but it didn't really get to be well known until the late 60s. Was it around the 30s, 40s, 50s? It probably was.
It probably is.
Seems like it didn't make the news. Like, it was, I don't know if that was crime being more careful or if the people who ran the newspapers just didn't consider that a topic to discuss. I'm not sure. I don't know.
When I moved there, say in the 70s, to when I get back from the military in the mid 80s, it was often in the newspapers. This massage parlor was busted. This woman was busted for running something at her home. I know when I went again, we went to the Mustang Bar with my father where he did refrigeration. It was pretty obvious, even though I was a kid, as a young teenager, what was going on. You had to be pretty much blind and not see the hooking. But yet, in the newspapers, all the time there's an article, about that. But then when I got back from the Army, it seemed that the city management took steps to end it finally. Is that what drove it away, the steps that the Madison police took to finally move them along, or what?
It's hard to say. If people wanted to go to my website, and I'll pimp my website out here for a moment.
Please.
No pun intended. framingbusiness.net. I do have a couple articles on Madison, but an article specifically again on Sam Cerro. And there was this thing again in the late 60s, early 1970s, where it was coming into the mainstream, where there were more topless bars. There were a lot of massage parlors, and the massage parlors did not hide the fact at all of what they were. Like,
no.
the people did not go there to get a massage. That's not really what they were for.
No.
And everybody kind of knew. And they went to the city council and they said, you know, this is freedom of speech, freedom of expression. If this is how we want to conduct business, we can. And it's weird because this argument probably wouldn't work anywhere else in the world. But because Madison being what it is, they actually were kind of like, oh, I don't know. So these legal battles would go on for years where every time they'd try to crack down on prostitution, they'd find another loophole. And they'd be like, oh, we're not prostitutes now. We're dancers. Oh, now we're this. And they'd keep changing what they were, but the business would never change.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Even today, right now in Madison, there's a place called the Geisha House. And the Geisha House has been there since 1972. I don't know if they're still doing the same thing as they were doing in 1972, but there's still a massage parlor.
Yeah, I know that we shot a movie called Hold Card. We shot, God, I can't think of the name of the movie. I was in it, too. My big starring role. God, I can't even think of the movie anymore. At Visions, right, which is a bar that my father and I used to work in the time, was a topless place. And even when we worked there at Take Fix and the refrigeration and the like, we knew it was different than it was in the 60s because when the guy would come in acting stupid, thinking the girls were hookers, the bouncers would politely walk them to their car, right? Didn't put up that shit. Where, say, when I was in high school, say, in the 70s, if somebody was looking for some action on the side, they were introduced to a girl on break, right? It's just interesting how things changed. And another quick story that nobody cares about, you get to hear anyway, is I had a date that came down to Madison to see me. I couldn't take her to the place I was staying at the time for various reasons, so I went to a hotel. And we weren't able to stay at a couple hotels because it was too close to Visions, and they thought she was a hooker. That was weird. But family morals change. I mean, and we can perhaps another day discuss the morality of prostitution, but maybe at the times in the 60s, and you know, nobody in Madison cared. I mean, there's other things to worry about. Christ, they're blowing up university buildings. You know, who cares?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean,
It's weird, but it was a big deal, and people would walk out with protest signs. A lot of the local churches got involved with protesting. And Visions wasn't, you know, as notorious as the massage parlors, but it was still, it would still get notoriety. And they got a really sneaky, they got a sneaky deal from the city. Do you know about Division's deal they got?
I only heard stories. I only heard rumors, so I don't know what the real deal is. So what's the real deal, sir?
Okay, so Visions was always targeted by the city, like most of these places were. And the city was going to pass a new obscenity law that would have made Visions illegal. Like whatever they were doing, you know, I don't know if it was just the dancing or what, but whatever they were doing would be illegal. And Visions cut a deal with them that said they could pass the new law, but it wouldn't apply to Visions as long as the Visions moved out when their lease ran out. And the city agreed to that. So the city thought, okay, we just got to deal with them another 3-4 years and they'll be gone. And that was back in, like, 1982. They've been getting lease extensions ever since.
So
I'm sure the laws have changed since then, but for a while there, they were actually in violation of the law, but they had a pass from the city.
Well, I mean, in retrospect, again, not getting morality of prostitution or trip bars for the time being, with all the other problems that Madison now has, especially, that's such a small, small thing for the city to worry about. Why bother?
Yes.
You know, and I can tell you the only recent incident I knew that got any police attention is they had some idiot show up at the bar drunk with a gun. And the bouncers threw him out as a problem in the parking lot. But by the time the cops got there, I think the bouncers, let's say, dealt with the situation severely enough where that was going to happen again. It's just insane. I mean, again, it's just insane. So we don't get – so Madison – When the mafia died in the 60s, say, in Madison, right? So then basically fill up their bags and went back to Milwaukee or Rockford, as we were talking before, or simply died out?
Well, this is the thing as near as I can tell. What happened is after the time of Prohibition, there was sort of a split. And some of them chose to stay on in Madison, and it kind of slowly faded away. And the ones who were more active and wanted to continue doing various scams and whatnot, they actually got up and moved to Rockford. So there were a handful of guys in Rockford in the 40s and 50s who had grown up in Madison. They just got up wholesale and left. So I don't know exactly what the reason is, why this happened, why they got out of Madison and chose Rockford instead. But, yeah, Madison just, it's weird. It Prohibition ended and it slowly faded away, or at least faded out of the spotlight. So I don't know what the reason is behind that. And a couple guys did move to Milwaukee. The Lugelbos, if you've heard of them, they were like from Madison and they moved over. They moved over to Milwaukee, and so there were a couple of names that did move over to Milwaukee. But yeah, any family name that was like associated with crime in Madison got up and left. I don't know how that happened.
I'll say this: obviously, I grew up in Madison. I'm a fan of the city, even though I live in the armpit of the world outside of Milwaukee. Is that Madison, in my opinion, is a far less corrupt city than Rockford? And it's my opinion that organized crime does far, far better in a corrupt city than, say, an honest one.
Yes. Yes. And there are people in Rockford who will tell you that exact same thing. I have a guy that I know in Rockford, and he'll feed me information and stories and things, and he doesn't want his name put out there because he's actually scared because he thinks there's still in, like, the sheriff's department. There's, like, a mob guy or two in the sheriff's department. And I don't doubt that. He knows way more than I do about it. But, I mean, so he's like, I'm not even putting in a record request because I don't want my name on that.
Well, I put my name on it for you if you want it. I don't care.
That's what I told him, too. I don't care, but I can understand that he lives there and he doesn't want
it. Right,
want
I know he doesn't want it, but, I don't care. And, every time I've driven to Rockford, it's not been a pleasant experience for different reasons. I'm shocked at that. And then I read about they want to build a casino near Rockford. And I'm thinking, mother of God, somebody's going to make a lot of money. And they don't even have to do the skim to do it. You know, they just supply the food, or they don't have, they just supply the maintenance workers, or the lawn care.
Right.
And, you know, and it's, so, and they're going to make that money, and they're going to position themselves to do it, right? It's going to be Katie bar the door. But again,
well,
you know,
yeah.
And what fascinates me to this, and maybe we can touch on it a bit, is in that, back in the days, let's say back in the 30s and 40s, so much gambling, booze and stuff was illegal, if not kind of frowned upon. But now you have cities like
mm-hmm.
Beloit is a good one example. Rockford's another in Chicago, you know, down in Illinois. Milwaukee, we have Pottawatomie, and we got the whole junk and doing that up in Green Bay area. Well, we have legal gambling, you know. There's a push
mm-hmm.
for legalization of marijuana, which I think should happen. I think it'll happen within my lifetime yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the things
yep.
that the mafia was traditionally making money on, they can't compete with the government.
Right.
You know, I mean, why would I, so is that hurting the mafia in real terms or no?
I'm not sure if I fully understand the question, but
sure. The fact that I can do all the gambling I want to do legally in Pennsylvania, right, makes it far less
yeah.
likely that I'm going to go to the local bookmaker and bet on the Packers.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think that's precisely what happened. Is once I don't know when it was, you know, like the late 80s or whatever it was, when we started giving all the Indian tribes these gaming rights. I think it did. I think it didn't kill the mafia, but it did a hell of a number. Because, yeah, I mean, I have never in my lifetime gone to a bookie. I know they still exist, but I've never
yeah.
used one. Because what's the point?
What would you, right? What would you?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's fascinating because the government in that aspect of it has become the mafia. You know, why do it in getting that profit, right? And I'm thinking,
true,
why did it take,
true.
You know, why did it take the government so long to figure it out?
I don't know. That's a good question.
And,
I don't
yeah.
know that answer.
I know that's an interesting speculation because I know that sometimes how you think that something will happen because they're intelligent people doesn't. Other people, I only call them less intelligent. That's not the word I'm looking for. Less risk averse. We'll take advantage of the situation and make
mm-hmm.
money on it. You know, where other people are worried. But who knows? I mean, this is a whole fascination. The idea, it's all because of our love of the history that lets us debate these questions.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's absolutely great. Now, I was asked to ask you one question tonight, and I hope
you were asked
it.
To ask me.
I was by the name party.
Uh oh.
Am I
allowed to know who wants to know?
Not right now. But it's a question that I think you can answer because it's people, you know, it happened long ago, and people have different opinions. Frank Rosenthal.
Okay. All right.
You know, the guy that's blown up as part of the thing. You know, I say that the more I think of my guy, Frank had him blown up. Tried to do that, right?
Okay.
My friend says
yep.
it's Kansas City. So we agreed to use as the arbiter of who had it done.
I see. Okay. whoa. I didn't know there was pressure on here.
There's pressure at all.
Now, from what I know, I never got the impression it was Kansas City. So, maybe he has information that I do, that I don't, that he's looking at it from a different angle. That could be. I don't know. I think Milwaukee is certainly a high possibility. If I had to take a guess, I would actually put it on Chicago. But Kansas City, no, I wouldn't. I would choose Milwaukee over Kansas City.
Yeah, my aspect is in the FOIA return that I got, if I close his face, I think it was Frank, right? Doesn't make it was Frank.
Yeah.
And the book, Strowman, by the former special agent, I'm going to mispronounce his last name, Magnuson, I think is how it's pronounced, right? He thinks it's Frank. You know, he thinks Frank had it done.
Yeah.
But the argument for Kansas City is, again, I'm going to mispronounce the names, and I apologize in advance, that the Clavellas, the organized crime faction in Kansas City, was mad as hell for the same reason Frank would have been mad, is they blamed Frank for the whole thing blowing up. And then suspicions that Frank was an FBI informant.
Sure.
You know,
Which
so
he was.
Which he was. And they suspected he was, and most people suspected he was, and which, again, begs the question, I don't know when he started to be an FBI informant, but if he was an FBI informant.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He might have actually really started after that, but, I mean, but he was always a big talker, so.
Yeah. I mean, if you blow me up and I survive the experience, yeah, I'm going to make that phone call. Oh, yeah, I'm going to make that phone call.
Yeah, I think his informing probably stepped up after the fact. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the guy was going around talking to everybody. He had his own late-night talk show. He wasn't the kind of guy who's going to keep his mouth shut.
No, no. And if you just have to listen to him and what he was saying, you could put two and two together. I think it's interesting stuff. I do. And I don't think we'll ever know for sure because everybody involved almost likely passed.
I don't know. I would love to hear the argument for Kansas City. I mean, to me, it's – I know Milwaukee had a big part of it. Not necessarily the blowing up of Frank Rosenthal, but, I mean, they're the ones that get the loan to buy the casino. So they're right involved in there. Two Ballesteri sons are the attorneys of record for the casinos. So they're right in there. Chicago has its own crew in Vegas. I mean, Frank Rosenthal's a Chicago guy. Tony Spilotro's a Chicago guy. So I'm not as familiar with Kansas City, so maybe it's just blindness because I don't know that as well. But, I mean, to me, it's Milwaukee and Chicago who are really, you know, involved with Frank Rosenthal and the casino, like, directly.
Yeah, that's my thought, too. But, again, you know, Kansas City was a part of the whole situation. Kansas City did invest money and manpower into it. They did a lot of stuff with booze and the like in Kansas City. I'm sorry, in Vegas as well. It could be them. A third outside, three-fourth party, an outside player that I need to look more into, which I would do if I was ever going to do Franco's of Vegas, is I would take a look at the Mormon church. Because I know a lot of Mormon churches were involved in the casinos, right? And
opinion, I'm like, I don't know where you're going. Well, how are the Mormons connected to the bombing? But to the casinos, I see what you're saying.
Right. You know, they're the source of loan. They did a lot of loan paperwork and got some a percentage of that money for doing those things. If you follow along, and I might be talking out my ass. Who knows? So if you follow the path, they might get upset too because their nice money just vanished into air, right? They might be a little bit upset. And with no disrespect meant to people of the LDS faith, when you look at some of the crazy cult-type activities we have in this country, when it comes to churches, the LDS is number one and number two, in my opinion, in that plate. So could one of them kind of get pissed off and said, okay, we got something to you, Frank. Yeah, that could have happened. That could have happened.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a leap to me, but it's possible. But you are right. It is funny that, like, again, like you say, no disrespect to anybody who happens to be Mormon, but it is funny that they're not allowed to gamble, but it's perfectly okay to own a casino. Like,
yes,
but why is that okay? I don't know.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, what I find interesting how we get to places. The thing, too, is when we were trying to do something down here in Racine, and I wanted to do a program about Frank in the Italian club that we now have around the lodge, right? And I talked to Ed of the dining services, who thought it was a great idea. Absolutely thought it was a gangbusting idea. And by the time he got home that night after he mentioned it to his boss, he was told if he mentioned it again, he could find another job.
Huh.
Yeah. And you know, Frank's been dead for a long time, right?
Yeah. Yep. Almost 20 years now.
So he's not, can't be offended. His one son is passed.
Well, actually, that's bad math. Almost 30 years now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Bad math.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, he's passed, right? I know his other one of his sons is passed. We know one, his last surviving son's got to be, what, 70? If he's a day?
He is 70. He's 71. He's 71.
Okay. So, yeah, so it is what it is. Yeah, and I can see why he would be upset, but I don't think we would necessarily have to program, meaning, you know, we want to, you know, it could be tamed down, you know, if somebody thought that a family member might be offended, right? Because we'd rather not do that. But still, it brings up that level of bad feelings and a heartbeat, and I don't get it. Can you explain that to me, sir? I really would like a clue.
No, I cannot explain that to you.
That's my free clue. Yeah, it's what it is, though. I just find this stuff history. Oh, now, you're coming out with a book on the... You have a book out now in Madison, do you hear it?
The book on Madison is out, yes, sir.
Where do we find your books at?
Well, you know, we're in the middle of a quarantine, so it's a little tricky, but, you know, anywhere that you can get a book, if it's online or wherever, you can. You can look up my name, or the book is actually called Murder Capital. So if you look up Murder Capital, it should come up. I don't even know where you can get books anymore. But if you know where you can find books, you can find it there.
So our first try should be Amazon, you're thinking, right?
Yeah, I hate to give Amazon any more business, but really this, one of the few still standing.
Again, you know, can we buy them from you directly?
Technically, if they shot me a message, I mean, I would send them one. I'd rather not do it that way, but I could, yes.
Okay, now I just want to make sure.
It would not benefit me anymore to get it directly from me. So.
Okay, just making sure, because we want to do what we can do here.
But, I mean, if somebody wanted signed or something, I would do it. So sure, just that.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is that I'm trying to give the different authors and stuff that come on this show the opportunity not only to talk about what they do and they write about the subject of interest, but they sell books to maximize their profits, because we all know the days and age, it's hard to move a book.
It is hard to move a book. But, yeah, whether you get it from me or you get it from Amazon or anywhere else, I'm getting paid a percentage off the publisher. So what – if Amazon can charge one price and Barnes & Noble can charge another, and that doesn't affect me in any way. So, makes no difference to me where somebody finds it, as long as they can find it.
Okay, as long as they can find it, please buy it. Please buy all. Now you have what? How many you got? You have the Milwaukee Mafia, right? You have Murder Capital, right? What other books have you written, sir?
Okay, so... as of now, there are currently 8 books in print. 4 of them are on organized crime, and 4 of them are on local history for the area I live in, which is Northeast Wisconsin. So I don't even live in the area I write about most of the time. But yeah, I mean, among the crime ones, yeah, there's Milwaukee Mafia, there's Murder Capital. The other one is Shallow Grave, which is my favorite still. It's about a kidnapping in Kenosha in the 1960s. Absolutely love that book. The fourth book is also called Milwaukee Mafia, because that's fun and confusing. They have 2 books with the same title. But one is a full-length book, and the other one is a photo collection of like 200 photos. So if you're somebody who wants to read 300 pages, there's a book for you. If you're somebody who doesn't like to read, and you'd rather look at 200 photos, including mugshots and autopsy pictures, there's a book for you there. So you've got your choices.
I'm going to get the one with the autopsy photos, because not that I'm big on corpses by any means, but it's nice to have an understanding of who and what happened to them. I would think out of your career choices, the Mafia is not be a good one.
Out of what? Pardon?
I know your career choices, right? Growing up, becoming part of the mob is probably not a good one.
No. I wouldn't recommend that for anybody.
No, nor I. But it's fascinating how many, it's fascinating how many, I'm going to call them kids. I mean, I like The Godfather, right? I like the movie. I like the Casino, the movie. I liked, I can't think of the other one. About New York, the Lens and Robbery. I can't think of the name of it. It's always on all the time. Anyway, Henry Hill, that movie, I like that movie. But I know the movies. You know, the movies are about things that happened, right? And the movie's meant for entertainment. I know for a fact that they glossed over some of the more bloodier aspects of it, right? Because the mafia, things usually don't work out for the best, you know?
Some guys make it to old age, but, you know, that's not always the case.
No. I mean, Christ, they shot the head of a Chicago outfit when he was, almost 70, maybe even his 80s, to think that Spoleto shot him when making a sandwich, you know? I mean, there's no such thing as retirement age. There's no such thing as, say, you turn 61, you get Social Security, okay, we can't touch you anymore, right? I mean, this is dead.
Right.
I'd rather be the garbage collector myself. Or I'd rather go to the vet and look for Bunyan's lost treasure.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there's something to be said about the excitement of crime and that sort of thing, absolutely. But the risk of death and long years in prison, it's not for me.
No. I mean, I can think of a lot better things to do in my time than spend 20 years in a 6x10 jail cell, you know.
Yeah.
And then you got poor, I will retract the words poor because I don't pity the man. Then you got El Chapo, who was worth billions, who now sits in a very, very cold cell looking at the mountains in Colorado. You know, he goes with one of the richest men in the world with anything at his disposal, right? To being able to buy and sell Mexican government officials, to be in basically a pit, which he's never going to see the light of day from. You know, that's got to be quite the thing. And people don't think about those things when they watch a movie and say, I'm going to be the next drug dealer in my block, because it most likely can end up in a prison cell.
Well, definitely.
But
yeah, there's very few people who get away forever.
No, very few.
Your odds are not good.
Your odds are not good. So, switch on to the mafia for a brief minute as we go start running down the show. What is the next book you're working on, sir?
What is the next book I'm working on?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, right now I'm on contract, so I'm writing a book on a man named Dan Seavey. Sometimes known as Roaring Dan, and he was allegedly a pirate on Lake Michigan who was involved in all sorts of scams and ended up getting in a gun battle with the Coast Guard. So that's fun. But a little bit outside of what I've done so far, I've had to learn a lot of nautical terms that I didn't know before, but still basically the Wisconsin crime thing that I really like. So Wisconsin history and crime, and this time we're just moving it over to the water. So that'll be out in early next year if this quarantine ever ends.
It should have been out
sooner, but, you know, things keep getting pushed off. So
that's the life of a writer, I can tell you that. My thing is I wanted to do Franco's of Vegas. I also... We started the writing of a book on the Buffalo Mafia, currently active today in Buffalo, New York, and in Canada. But life happens, right? Life happens.
Sure.
And there's a time to put things on the shelf and maybe hope and pray, and there's a time to say, ain't it going to happen? You know, but you never know.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen in one particular day. It's very fascinating talking to you. It is a very pleasant experience. I also want to thank you very, very much for being part of that film we did, Frank.
Oh, hey, you're welcome. And if people haven't seen it, where can they see the documentary?
Well, they can see the documentary. They simply go to YouTube and put out Frank's – I can't pronounce his name best of the time. But you simply enter in Frank's name, and it will come up. and you can see it for free. Obviously, it's on YouTube. It's in free. It's also in Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it as well. YouTube, you can do it as well. You get my book on Milwaukee, Frank, the Last Most Powerful Godfather of Milwaukee. It's on Amazon, and he's pleased to bring you this show tonight. Again, The Life and Times of Frank, whose name I can't pronounce, The Last Most Powerful Godfather of Milwaukee, you can buy on Amazon. And I don't have a problem with Amazon. Amazon gives me money. I'm very, very happy.
I don't have a problem with them either. They're just, they've become kind of their own little, they're the only bookstore left, so.
And the thing is, I will say this. I've worked with Amazon, I've looked with and with ACX when it comes to audiobooks, and Amazon gives me the information I want right away. If there's a question, they answer it. If there's a problem, it's a phone call or an email, I get an answer. I mean, I like the answer, but I will get an answer within a day. And they don't have a problem with saying, I don't know, but I'll talk to somebody that does. That means a lot to me. With ACX, and audiobooks, I get bullshit, I get lies, I get misdirection consistently. So we're going to do the Mr. Big series we have in Gambling Table Games ourselves, because we have that technology, as in audiobooks, I mean. But anyway, I don't want to carp any more to you about that. We can carp on that separate on a private phone call sometime. But you're my hero, by the way. I look up to you.
Okay.
Well, no, for sure. I don't know enough writers, obviously, in the state. I'm sure there's more than you and I, and a few others I know. And I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm not at all. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate the exchange of information. You're so free to give. I appreciate that you can call you, talk to you online and stuff, and you can respond. It means a lot to me. And at this stage of my life, it's important for me to sit there and say, people do a good job. You're one of them.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I've said this before, and I said it on Facebook Live the other day. I'm just all about getting information out there. I mean, I like getting paid, but really it's all about getting information out there, getting history out there. So if anybody has questions, I mean, feel free to send me a message, and if I can get you the answer, I'll get you the answer. I really want to help people get a hold of this forgotten history. So.
I appreciate that. So let me ask you one question. One last final question, right?
Go for it. Yeah.
You stumbled into Bunyan's Lost Treasure of Silver Coins, right? So you're set for life, right? You're set for life.
Yes.
If there's a topic that you could research and an historical subject, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. That's a great question. I feel like I'm already doing it. I don't know. I'm writing what I love writing. I look forward to it every single day. So I don't know that I would do something different. I think I'm researching what I like.
Okay, so you don't want to look research into another more infamous mafia figure or some type of other crime figure or perhaps a government corrupt government official, corrupt city, or whatever happened to Joe Bull from Kokomo. You're doing what you want to do, investigating a little-known subject of Wisconsin history.
Yeah, I love the true crime, and I love Wisconsin history. So, I mean, I'm already doing exactly what I want to do.
The only difference is if I had
more funding, if I had this, millions of dollars of gold, I could afford more records because court records aren't cheap. So there is that roadblock there, but that's the only thing I would change. It's just better access to records.
I mean, I also know the FBI is not doing FOIA requests anymore because of the flu, which I find interesting.
Yeah,
I don't. I don't know what one has to do.
Yep, they're not even accepting requests right now. You're right. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know what one has to do with the other, but who knows?
I don't understand it either.
But we'll give it to we'll let the experts go on this way for a while and give them the benefit of the doubt because we also have recourse to our elected officials to say, hey, this needs to be fixed, and hopefully they do that.
It's fine. It's a disappointment, but I'm just keeping a running list. So when they're back up and running, they're just going to get that much more from me.
Yeah, I know. One of the things, too, if I have to charge, I mean, I got thousands of pages from the FBI about Frank. Far more than I thought. I may have been lucky to get 4 or 5. So I got this email saying, oh, here's a bunch of links. Oh, here's more. Oh, we got these here. That created the Frank book. I'm told there's a possibility I could even see more, but I doubt it. But you don't know what is out there in government records. And there's National Archives. There's our State Historical Society. You know, there's all kinds of places, all kinds of records. And they also, some of them, have employees like you that want more people, not less people, to know the information, which I think racks on.
Oh, yeah. No, I have to say, from going around and giving talks, like, that's a question that always comes up. It's like, how do you have access to all this information? And then I have to explain to people that we all have access. You don't need to be somebody special. I mean, we're all somebody special. But, you know, that's how government documents work, that if you ask for them, they have to give them to you. Those are the rules. So
those are the rules.
It's been great. It's been great getting more people to... Yeah. And I've had people tell me that, you know, they went out and made a request and they got information back. And I love hearing that follow-up from people that that I got them to know that they could do that, because I want people to everybody should know that if you have a question, whether it doesn't have to be crime. I mean, if there's something the government does that you're like, why does the government do that? They have to tell you. Like, the documents are public, so...
Right. I mean, to me, going back to the mafia and corrupt cities and that, the way, my firm belief is one of the best ways we can keep crime out of government is become involved with our local government. We all can't run for office. We all can't do different things. I get that, right? But we all can go to a city council meeting once in a while. We all can call our local city alderman or state senator or whomever and say, hey, I've appreciated that. I don't like this idea. What can we do about whatever, right? So they know you're watching. You know, it frustrates me in the scene where I live that when you go to ask for information, they don't do open records correctly, and their attitude basically becomes, okay, we're not going to give this to you. We're going to sue us, knowing that people like I and most other people don't have the money to hire a lawyer to sue them.
Sure. Yeah, so, and I mean, I don't mean to paint a rosy picture. There are some agencies and departments that will fight you on it, definitely. But
you can persevere. You can definitely persevere. And I'm just blaming Racine because I see things. I see things going on, and I'm saying, "Oh, I wish I could look into it," but you can't. I mean, at one time, I wrote a blog about Racine, and people would come by and dump off envelopes of city information that they were taking out of files because they knew the newspaper wouldn't print anything about it. But I would talk about my blog. Right, not that I stopped anything evil from happening from Racine. I didn't put anybody in jail. In fact, I would like to look into what really happened with our Mayor Becker and the child porn they found in his computer, because the story we get told happened doesn't make a lot of sense. But that's for an expert far outside my pay range and some resources. But enough of that, sir.
And I don't know anything about that, but that sounds like a heck of a story.
Oh, well, I'll tell you that story. That'd be a phone call, but I'll tell you that story because you may understand how to go about it. The little English lady just told me I need to leave the show. So I want to thank you again, sir, for being part of the show. I really, really appreciate all your time, sir.
It's been my pleasure. We should do it again.
We will do it again. And I'll be touched with you soon about Mr. Becker. And with that, sir, I wish you the best of evenings, and watch out for giant pirates in Lake Michigan.
Good night.
All right. Good night, sir. Bye. What a nice guest. I can't think of a better person I have on the air than Mr. Smith. I've known him, less than a year. He's been a resource of remarkable worth. I that's probably the wrong way to put it, but he's a good guy. He's a great resource. Buy his books. You know, you buy the book, the couple of pennies that he gets helps him do the next book. I'll tell you that right here. You know, that's for any author. If you like their books, if you like their stuff, buy a book. By their author, maybe they're doing a newsletter, sign up for it. Maybe they sell a T-shirt, buy a T-shirt, you know, because it's a little money here and a little money there that adds up that lets you get the next thing. And as for me and my book, since I'm in a runny mood, thank God I only have seconds left, it's the money you give me when you buy my books that allows me to feed the stray cats here, period. That's it. That's the big pitch. Buy my book and Frank, you're helping me feed some cats. Thank you very much for your help. I appreciate your support. Bye-bye.